This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 20th of October, 2021. Another banner day for equities in the U.S., fifth consecutive session and a pretty good one in the U.S., where we see the S&P 500 now within a percent of those all-time highs after yesterday's session. You can see on slide two the mix of in our baskets, especially the speculative stuff coming in strong yesterday, everything from cannabis to bubble stocks posting strong gains. There's that cluster that Peter Gonery has called it of speculation in for things like Tesla and Bitcoin. There seems to be a lot of correlation there as we're seeing Bitcoin getting close to those all-time highs after the launch of a Bitcoin futures ETF in the U.S. And quite interesting as all this is happening ahead of Tesla's earning after the close today. Stane, we have you on the call again this morning. Great to have you here. And we have a lot to talk about because we have some interesting news overnight. This is the first story I want to talk about because I find it very interesting. We had this recent story on, of course, copper prices rising close to those all-time highs. And then we see this huge wave of concern around the Chinese property sector. Should, you know, at the margin be one of the biggest sources of demand for global copper in the world. And despite that, we saw copper in this very aggravated rally recently. Turns out some of this was due to potentially one of these commodities traders, Trafigura in this case, draining LME copper inventories, as Bloomberg puts it. And for perspective on slide three, I put in the forward curve. So the blue line there shows you how steep the backwardation is there. There's some, apparently some of the spreads that reached near all-time records, and the LME is actually investigating what's going on here and has changed some rules. You can see how steep that backwardation is relative to where we were at the all-time highs back in May of this year. What's your take on a story like this? Is this some dirty deeds and some market manipulation here, or what's your takeaway?
So as Ole would tell us, the spot market needs to clear in commodities, and that makes the vast difference for foreign exchange, fixed income, and equity. So this basically means that the net demand in the forward end of the curve is massive. The fact that trading houses like Trafigura needs to redraw a lot of stock, now taking the stock to the lowest since 1974, indicates there is a massive pent-up demand that they can ship immediately to customers. So to me, it indicates that we are in for a very, very, very difficult winter. And again, I will remind everybody, we're only in October. And with the cold winter from potentially coming, it's going to get much worse before it gets better. But, you know, as Ole would have told us, this is all about the net demand in the short end, and it needs to be delivered. It needs to be going out of the warehouses, and hence now there's an investigation by the LME. But all these investigation is really relatively futile in the sense that it's about spot demand being too high.
And then you did an interesting in our brief chat before in the morning meeting this morning. We talked about yesterday the huge leap higher in the Chinese renminbi after it had traded quite quietly relative to what was going on in the rest of the foreign exchange market. And you linked that to a degree with this news overnight that we have China, at least verbally, intervening in the coal market sufficiently so to crush coal prices, at least relative to the last couple of sessions. The most traded contract was down some 8 to 9% last time I looked this morning. So you think the tact here is to using the currency as a way to ensure prices are not rising too rapidly, or at least you were linking those two stories.
Yeah, so nothing in China happens in a vacuum. So the fact that one day, the day before yesterday, that the currency strengthened significantly, and then the next day that you see a verbal intervention in terms of the coal prices is a clear indication that the authorities in China wants to, one, reduce the price of goods coming in through making the currency stronger, and two, they want to curtail the prices. And what needs to be understood by everybody is that the reason for this sort of cap on prices and help to the industry is simply that the state-owned enterprises is the most important part of the Chinese economy, as seen from the chair of President Xi Jinping. So when these companies, the utilities, not right now operate with a massive deficit, that is money he knows he needs to reduce the impact on, not only in terms of the outlay, but also in terms of the impact in the short term. So this is, in my opinion, nothing is 100% certain, but it's definitely 95% certain that these two things are linked, number one, and number two, that the Chinese authorities is now seeing a serious issue in terms of the impact on the state-owned enterprises in China.
It's a key story to track, as we've seen those coal prices, you know, they were already at very elevated, say, back in August, and doubled from those very elevated levels since then. So there's a lot of wood to chop if they're to go back to anything resembling the prior range, similar to natural gas prices in Europe. And we're talking about all the impact of these big price rises on the economy. You know, at what point, and you brought up, sent me a chart this morning, or a graphic that we have on slide four, the GDP now. So there are a couple of regional feds that do these sort of live GDP trackers. There's the New York Nowcast and the Federal Reserve of Atlanta's GDP Now, where you put up a graphic from, actually I'm not sure who it's from, doesn't matter, from them, I guess, on where they see growth now, and it's heading towards zero this quarter. What's going on? What's the driver here of such low growth numbers? Some of the headline numbers we're seeing, ISM surveys, et cetera, have been extremely strong of late. Retail sales not doing badly. What do you think is driving these low estimates right now?
So these are high frequency data that all of the local, well, not all, but quite a few of the local Federal Reserve Central offices uses. And what it indicates is that if you look at the economic activity, and I think this is really about the supply chain to a large extent, and the fact that it's very difficult to hire people. So when you look at the Atlanta Fed area, which of course is Georgia and the surrounding region, then we are basically seeing that growth has come to a standstill after this massive 6-7% that we saw in the late part of the summer. So remember, all of the reporting you have and data you're referring to a very strong consumer demand that is in backwards looking. This is trying to be at a minimum being up-to-date data that they track. And what really concerns me is that, you know, not only is Federal Reserve behind in terms of dealing with the inflation issue, but now they have the dual challenge of seeing that the GDP growth is collapsing in front of them, which essentially means that we need to spell the word stagflation. And I know a lot of listeners and people have a hard time, enough time to understand why and how we got inflation. Now we are even going towards a potential stagflation. And for the record, a number of very smart people I talked to do expect that we will see a 6.5-7% print in the U.S. Year-over-year CPI over the next 3 to 4 months, which to me is clearly going to be the end of this cycle in terms of, you know, equity's ability to navigate this. So what is going on, as we said yesterday, is really that a number of people, and I was just listening to CNBC waiting for you to call me up, John. And again, everyone who comes on TV says, oh, inflation, you know, at this level is very good because there's a pricing power. Yeah, there is a pricing power, but you cannot deliver the goods, number one. And if you want to ship the goods, it's very expensive. And the physical system is still too small. So what we'll see is that as we come into Q4 and we report backwards, we will see a massive margin erosion and much, much higher price being passed through. And just the last thing, yesterday, Nestle, which is the biggest consumer brand in the world, is saying they're going to put up prices again.
Yeah. And just to spell out very briefly what stagflation is, it is, of course, very low real GDP growth with high inflation levels. It's that the worst of all worlds, isn't it, for policymakers, because tinkering with the interest rate does nothing at the margin to affect neither the one side of the coin nor the other.
Exactly. And I think there's a moral hazard for the Federal Reserve to be very proactive in terms of increasing liquidity. Number one, because of the lack of moral compass they have all shown in terms of their own stock trading, which is, of course, has been feeding not only the stock market, but also their own portfolios. But more importantly, I think the put on the Federal Reserve is significantly lower now, simply because that new academic papers, new sort of agreed upon academic studies is showing that the increase of liquidity will increase inequality. And the last thing the US administration want to look at going into the midterm election is being called out for increasing through its central bank the inequality.
And then on the stag part of stagflation, we have the forward risk of this so-called fiscal cliff. I talked about it yesterday in my FX update, just this idea that because of this, the size of that stimulus post-pandemic outbreak, the comparative fiscal outlays, of course, just by definition, will be significantly lower next year unless these enormous fiscal packages plus some are passed. And these are quickly getting whittled down. And I put in a little graphic from Wall Street Journal lead-in article on their the discussions on this $3.5 trillion package, and that's spread over 8 to 10 years, being potentially whittled down to $2 trillion to get the all the Democrats on board to get that passed. So that's going to be an additional risk, I suppose, going forward. Or not, I suppose it will be an additional risk growth wise at least going forward. And then just to round out FX, we have a dollar that is weak after that big Chinese renminbi move, but strong versus the Japanese yen. We saw a boost again to longer term yields, a very slight yield curve steepening yesterday. The 10-year managed to scrape to new local highs. It's pulled back a little bit, and we're seeing dollar yen pulling back from this really massive 114.50 level. You can see on slide 5 that we posted new little local highs there above that level. Just look back at your charts. This is a huge, huge level for hedgers, for Japan, which is extremely aware of its currency exchange rate versus the US dollar here. So this is really a monumental area for that pair. And you can see on the trend readings how very weak the Japanese yen is. It could get weaker still, provided A, we have a further boost in commodity and especially energy prices, and we have higher long sovereign yields, which we're still not getting. And we talked a little bit, Stane, yesterday about whether these lower long yields are a sign of concerns for forward growth. Certainly, we need to keep an eye on that long of the curve if we're trading the Japanese yen.
But it's spiking up. I mean, it's basically breaking out this morning. It's trading 165-ish, and it's going up. And I think what is also interesting in the foreign exchange space is less traded currencies, like the ruble, is breaking down significantly. And of course, your Aussie dollar also broke up. So, one, my favorite trade right now is long the Aussie and short the sterling. I think that is two different cycles. It's two policies that needs that's coming apart. So I really like those trades. I think the fixed income market, it's only a matter of time before we break the 170, and then we will be, in my opinion, getting very, very close to the 2% in a quick fashion. Because if me and, so to speak, my friends are right that inflation will spike, you cannot sit back and ignore this risk. For now, it's nirvana, as you can see in the basket stock. I think is what chart is that, number 2, John?
The second slide that has all of our different baskets that we track. And a lot of those are created around all these focus on these extremely...
But look at bubble stocks up 9.3% for the month. And these are interest rate sensitive stocks, right? So if anyone out there want to look at what's going on right now and monitor it, do go to Peter's research page on Saxo and find the bubble stocks and monitor this bubble stocks basket, because that is the one that will be a most... noticeable in terms of the net changes to the interest rate scenario. So amazing performance 6 months from this. Of course, outbeaten by crypto and one of the long-term themes that both Peter and the whole team likes, which of course is cybersecurity. Interesting that next-gen medicine continues to underperform relatively with no performance on the year. But overall, do keep an eye for those of you who likes to have an indicator on Peter's bubble stocks. And I think you can find them on Saxo's webpage, right, John?
Yes, definitely. And there's also instructions how to find the different baskets in the platform as well with the slide deck for those of you who are Saxo clients. By the way, you mentioned sterling. There was a slightly weak CPI data point out this morning, missed by 0.1% on the month-on-month and the year-on-year. Still at 80-plus percent, though, for a move at the 4th of November Bank of England meeting. But that's a local little key data point there. And as I discussed yesterday on Aussie versus the dollar, at least, this 75 to 0 spot 76 area, really, really, really critical for the structure of that chart. Let's get back to, and actually I should mention, when you're talking about inflationary pressures, there was a German PPI out this morning, just some moments ago, Let me get the numbers up so I don't misquote what it is. For the month on month, a record at 2.3% for a single month on month gain, the PPI, and 14.2% on the year on year. So this is inflationary pressures you can believe in. You also spoke, Stane, about at least a company or two discussing pricing pressures and passing those along. It was at Nestle, I believe you mentioned yesterday, Procter & Gamble, the U.S. consumer products giant, reporting they actually disappointed relative to expectations, and the stock was down around 1%, which is actually quite a bit for that stock, which trades at very low volatility. But they are also talking about pricing pressures and that they are willing to pass those on. And then ASML, the Dutch lithography, so this equipment for making the highest end equipment for making semiconductors, out reporting. They're still an incredible growth company and they're still growing, but they're reporting lower than expected growth anticipation for Q4. They are affected by all these supply chain issues as well. And you can see the earnings overview, what's coming up next, on slide 6. As noted, Tesla reporting today, and it's managed to crawl back to those all-time highs, which we suspect is very much correlated potentially with the cryptocurrency space. But of course, they're going to have to answer as well about the issues in semiconductor space, as all other automakers are experiencing as well. And then the big chip maker Intel is out on Thursday. Then if we look at our macro calendar, we have a number of ECB speakers out today. Canadian CPI will be interesting for that one ahead of next week's Bank of Canada meeting. A US 20-year Treasury auction, quite interesting. It was the 10 and 30-year auctions last week that sort of beat back an advance in yields that looked like a breakout. And then we came back in the range, and now we're sort of poking at the edge of a breakout again. So that could be influential there. And the Fed Beige Book, I think, Stane, that one could be interesting for these anecdotal types of reports around about the different Fed regions on what companies are seeing in terms of labor shortages, supply chain issues, and otherwise. And I don't know if you have any closing words here. I think, I get a sense of, there was even a John Authors column this morning out with some title like, the inevitability of stocks rising. What's just your, do you have a broad take on where the market is right here? I've been quite stunned myself at this comeback in equities, full comeback, nearly complete, basically to the all-time highs.
I think the whole market is based on that ultimately Fed's got inflation under control and interest rate will be moving in a slow grinding fashion. I have exactly the opposite view. I don't think Fed knows what they're doing. And I think they are, as I said before, under moral duress. And I think inflation is only a matter of time before it breaks out and leads the world as you go in terms of interest rate, because we need a higher price to clear the market right now. And what we're seeing is no follow through on fiscal in terms of the US. So they are, seeing dropping GDP, interest rate rises and rising inflations. That is a cocktail the stock market will not like ultimately. So for me, I'm adding up on my puts against my 100-year portfolio. As many of you know, I run 75% of my money in the 100-year, but the 25% I have on alpha right now and being invested, taken from the little bit of profit in the commodity space alpha I have, and then I'm buying some put on the S&P 500, which I deem to have a higher rate sensitivity to what is incoming over the next 3 months. So I'm going to take some of the profit for this year, 1 to 2% of the profit, and put it into puts, because this is not going to hold. That's at least what my gut tells me. Not that it's worth anything for the clients, but I'm going to put my money where my mouth is in terms of the downside here.
Well, there's a bit more than your gut and the analysis there, to be fair. And by the way, I like John Arthur's column title here. Resistance, the title of the column is, quote, resistance to buying stocks is becoming ever more futile, close quote. But then the little blurb below that actually, I think, underlines the point that the risks that you're pointing out, Stane, as he notes that fund managers' equity allocations are higher than they were during the dot-com boom. I think that says a lot. We've had Peter talking endlessly as well on the perspective on where we are in terms of valuation multiples, et cetera. So this is a highly extended market, not to say it can't get further extended, but there's certainly a lot of strain at these levels, straining credibility, at least on where we head next. By the way, this is the last of our daily calls in terms of market updates we'll have this week, as the team is mostly off. And we'll put out a couple of content items, hopefully in the coming days. But in terms of the daily market call expectations you have out there. We'll be back on Monday with the standard formats. Just a little heads up on that front. For now, be very careful out there, and we'll be back soon with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.